Blog Talk Radio.
Rejoice, we are rejoicing, and we will be glad in it. My friends, I greet you today in the name of our precious Savior and Lord. This is Reverend Mary Newbern Williams, your host for Soul Sunday, and we are coming to you compliments of caregiverstory.com, your Why Wait station. The producer of this show is Carolyn A. Brent, and my friends, we are excited today. We're excited because a group of fine Presbyterians of the Presbyterian Church USA have just returned from a mission trip, mission program visit, and lots of good work to Nicaragua. And I am pleased and blessed to interview today Ms. Joyce Faltis Serenil, and she is indeed a leader, a strong, wonderful Presbyterian, and she has just led a group of 11 of us to Nicaragua to work with partners in ministry. Joyce, we are grateful to have you on the show today. We have listeners all over the United States, London, England, and I understand very possibly in Nicaragua, and I'm very excited about that today. Joyce, God bless you today. Thank you for being with us, and I'd like to ask if you would share with us a bit about where you're from, where you went to school, something about your career, and what you are doing now. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much, Mary. It's really a wonderful opportunity to be here with you today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, to answer your questions, I grew up in eastern Iowa, but I've been in Omaha, Nebraska now for 35 years. I worked for Union Pacific Railroad in the financial and information technologies areas, but I'm retired now, so I have a little bit more time for my passions. And one of those passions would certainly be mission and outreach to the Latino community here in Omaha and as well in Nicaragua. So as far as educational background, I have a undergraduate degree from the University of Iowa in finance and an MBA from the University of Nebraska in decision sciences. So my background is actually very quantitative, and I'm a numbers person. But the opportunity to do mission and outreach really is able to take my life in a whole different direction. So that's pretty interesting for me.
Yes, it really is. I'd like to ask if you would tell us how you first became involved with mission with Nicaragua and with the Latino community, and why that community.
Well, I guess originally it really might go back to, and this is a testimony to the value of education. In high school, I had a very energetic and wonderful high school Spanish teacher who introduced me to the excitement of how when we have the power of a foreign language, we are able to surmount a wall that might be between us and the other person who speaks a different language. And talk about a feeling of empowerment at a young age to be able to breach that divide or cross that wall. It made me excited about travel to anywhere where I could use that language skill. And so then in 1999, a friend of mine through the Presbyterian Church asked whether I'd be interested in going on a trip to Nicaragua. And actually, I thought about it for about a minute and a half and said, yes, I'll go.
Okay.
Sign me
about
up.
About a minute and a half, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It took you a long time to make up your mind, didn't it?
It did. It's also one of those examples that when the Lord has, when the Holy Spirit has prepared the soil, what's to come later is it's easy to make that leap because you know that it's a good fit. You don't have to twist somebody's arm to get them involved.
Certainly.
If the way's been prepared.
And this ministry certainly seems to be a good fit for you and for those who have traveled with you. How long have you been traveling back and forth to Nicaragua? And if you have a feel for about how many people you estimate have traveled back and forth with you, I think our listeners would be very interested in knowing a little bit about the length of time and the various projects and how many have participated.
Okay. Well, as I mentioned, my first trip to Nicaragua was in 1999, and I actually then was not involved very heavily for a few years until about 5 years later, then I got a lot more involved and have been very involved since then. But over that time, the last 17 years since 1999, people from the eastern Nebraska and western Iowa area have taken 11 trips to Nicaragua, and we have brought our partners from Nicaragua here to visit us four times over that time frame. So with 11 trips, and there are certainly some repeats, but I think it would be easily possible that 50 people from our area had traveled to Nicaragua in that time.
That's an excellent number of people to go and be exposed to the people, to the beautiful language, to their hospitality, and to looking directly and firsthand at what those needs are. So our listeners will have a better idea. Could you please share just an overview of the country of Nicaragua, its economic condition, a little bit of the history as you know it, and perhaps there are other groups we did meet. Listeners, we did meet at least two other mission groups that were going to different areas of Nicaragua to do the kinds of work that we were doing. But Joyce, give us a bit of an overview of the country so people can have a feel for it.
Okay, well, I will sure do the best that I can. The history of Nicaragua and its involvement, or maybe the U.S.'s involvement with Nicaragua, has been many and varied and complex. So, but there are some things I certainly would like to mention. I guess what's in our recent memory for many of us, the thing that stands out was that in the 1970s, of course, there was the Sandinista Revolution in Nicaragua, and then the United States was not too pleased with that because there was such a heavy socialist and even potentially communist influence to that. And so subsequently, in the 1970s, the United States government spent a lot of money supporting people who had been termed Contras, who fought contra to the duly established Nicaraguan government. And it caused a period of great war and turmoil and many deaths throughout the 1970s. So it, in many ways, it's very touching that the Nicaraguan people are now as loving and hospitable to us as they are at this time, given that particular history. And even going back before that, earlier in the 1900s, there was a pretty good long period of U.S. Marines occupying Nicaragua, and
yes,
there was
indeed.
Even a time. Mm-hmm, there was even a time that a man by the name of William Walker had proclaimed himself an American by that name, had proclaimed mm-hmm. himself president of Nicaragua. And that was a time of great turmoil, but it's been just a very interesting and checkered history.
Mm-hmm.
As far as
like
economically,
many of our nations, certainly. Mm-hmm. Go right ahead, please.
Right. And economically, the one thing I would mention is I had done a little research on this recently, and mm-hmm. according to the International Monetary Fund, Nicaragua has the third lowest, that is the third worst, if you will, gross domestic product per person out of all 34 countries in the Western Hemisphere. So essentially the third poorest country in our hemisphere. And people always ask me when I say that, what countries are more poor? And
yes.
so I'll head that question off. And the poorest would be Haiti, and
yes.
secondly, Honduras.
Honduras.
But the economic situation in Nicaragua is very difficult. I believe the statistic then was that the gross domestic product per person is about $5,000 a year
mm-hmm.
in Nicaragua. So you can see that that is vastly different from the United States. And in fact,
indeed.
When we were on this particular trip, you noticed that the homes that we stayed in, we were lucky if we had running water.
Indeed.
They do tend to have electricity.
But
Many of them have outhouses rather than indoor plumbing.
Yes.
And I was blessed to be staying in a house that actually had a shower. So that was
yes.
pretty exciting, and that was a first for me in my 7 trips to Nicaragua over the years. That
okay.
was something new. So
indeed.
That is another thing, is the economic situation, as we've seen over these past 16 years or 17 years, has, interestingly, really improved. We see
good.
More roads and more homes with better plumbing or indoor plumbing and better
yes.
electricity. So that's been exciting to see these last few trips, that we actually can see some significant improvement.
I'm happy to hear that. I was blessed, for our listening audience, I was blessed to be able to accompany Joyce and several others on this particular visit and mission trip to Nicaragua, and I was too blessed to be with a home and a wonderful family that did have a shower and indoor plumbing and facilities, although the toilet did at one time flush, but we did have to flush it with buckets of water. In spite of that, the families, as those that I have visited in Africa, in the Jordan, and other places where the economy is straining, in spite of those things, the people are very clean, they are very conscientious, and they are very welcoming, no matter how little they have or how humble their homes are. They will welcome you with open arms and be the most gracious hosts and hostesses ever. One of the things we also talked about, Joyce, was that as compared to some nations of the world, we have many conveniences here in the United States. We may be rich by economic reasons and by other standards. We have many comforts, many conveniences. We are economically far better off in many ways, according to some ways of thinking. However, one of the things I noticed is that our Nicaraguan partners have much to teach us in terms of faith, in terms of spiritual depth, in terms of their commitment to the Lord. And there is a bit of a diversity in religious faiths there, because we did meet one of the leaders of the Jewish faith who was there. He is an indigenous Nicaraguan, and he is of the Jewish faith. Most of the people there are of the Christian faith. And I'd like to ask if you could address that for a moment. How have our Presbyterian members and community people who have gone to visit with us there, how have they bridged that difference between the economic wealth of the United States and the spiritual wealth of our partners?
Well, first I'd like to say that I couldn't agree with you more. Everything you've just said, that it becomes readily apparent that when we are wealthy, there is the potential for our wealth, I think, to cause us to believe that we can take care of ourselves, that we are masters of our own fate, and we can pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps, and that we deserve what we have. But the truth is that that wealth can get in the way of our spirituality. And the Nicaraguans are such a wonderful example of that, because I believe because they have less economically, they are able to more clearly realize their need and their dependence for God. And you will notice so many times they will answer a question, and their answer will be gracias a Dios. In other words, thanks to God, I will do such and such.
Yes.
Or thanks to God, yes, we will go forward on that project.
Yes.
And they are so intimately aware of their dependence on God.
Yes.
And I'm
yes.
glad also that you touched on that point of ecumenism and diversity, because that was something that was really interesting about this particular trip, and also our partners on their end, is that although this trip was sponsored by the Missouri River Valley Presbytery of the Presbyterian Church USA denomination or faith tradition, of which you and I are both a part, this particular group of 11 people was really very diverse.
Yes,
we represented, I believe, four different faith traditions, three others besides Presbyterian, and we were Presbyterians from six different worshiping communities or congregations. And we were also diverse in terms of age. The group ranged from 16 to 70,
yes.
diverse ethnically, and as well as just in all sorts of ways. We were a
Indeed.
Diverse group traveling. And then the group, our partners on the other end, are 23 churches formed together in a pastoral council in their municipality of La Concepcion, which they also call La Concha for short.
Yes.
Their churches are a tremendous variety. Many of them, I believe, are basically independent, small worshiping communities, not really necessarily part of any particular denomination.
Yes.
But also they have some in their partnership in that municipality are Church of God, some are Baptist, and there are just many different denominations represented on their end.
Yes.
So this particular trip, the theme of that theme of diversity just kind of seemed to come up over and over again in so many different ways with regard to the participants on both ends.
It did indeed.
And now your question was broad enough that I'm afraid I've forgotten the rest, but that's
We'll come back to it. One of the things that I noticed as we touched on the diversity several years ago, our denomination, the Presbyterian Church USA, developed a program entitled Unity in Diversity, and that we are people from many backgrounds, many places, but we are one in the Lord. And I really do think that that was something that was displayed this time. I was also very proud to see that there were, that I met two clergy women, two women who were pastors. We attended a worship service, and there was one female pastor there. And then during the week when we conducted the Bible school, Vacation Bible School for the young people, another clergy woman and pastor attended. So I was impressed to see that there is a bit more representation of women who are taking on the pastoral role and willing to really, in that area, be pioneers in terms of teaching, leading congregations, and preaching the word. And so I was really quite excited to see that. While we are talking, for those who are our partners from Nicaragua who are listening, we will give a shout out to David, our interpreter from CPOD, and for his assistance, and to Luke for his work as well. Luke is the son of a Presbyterian pastor, and he has now been living and working in Nicaragua for a time, and to all of the pastors and others who participated, to Sara, Sarah, and Carmen, and Anita, and many others who took the time to come and spend with us to educate us about the needs of the people, about their future vision for the community and for the people. We give you thanks, and we continue and will continue to keep you in our prayers. Joyce, would you give us a bit of an overview of where in Nicaragua we worked and a little bit of that community? We flew into Managua, but what did we do from there, and where did we go from there?
Mm-hmm. So after flying into the capital city of Managua, we sort of made our home base at a non-governmental organization, which is the acronym CEPOD, and it is the Council of Evangelical Protestant Churches of Nicaragua, and it was formed in 1972 after the big earthquake, which really devastated Nicaragua. And they thought they were going to be a short-term relief organization and then go out of business, but they quickly learned that the structure that they put together was so effective in distributing aid at a time when, honestly, the government was extremely corrupt, and aid that came in through the government was siphoned off and lined the pockets of the Somoza dictators. And the church, which was, you know, such a CEPOD was a umbrella organization of many churches bonded together, and was much more reliable in getting that international aid actually into the hands of the people.
Certainly.
And so then after the earthquake, they sort of metamorphosized then into an organization which is really about empowerment of the people, training people in local communities to work for themselves and become leaders and learn how to work with the government to bring in electricity or running water. And they help local communities develop kind of commissions that then can build that leadership locally. And then also they just realized that there were so many things that they could do when they help local communities to, for example, work with women doing microloan programs. And they have something called the Patio Project, where they go into a community and identify families that could benefit from maybe receiving seeds to plant certain crops, or receiving some chickens or maybe a pig or a cow to start raising their own food. And they really are able to do wonderful things in development. Mm-hmm. So the CEPOD organization has then continued over time.
Yes.
And so they also have a guest house and facilitate partnerships like ours.
Yes.
So
one of the
that's where
go
we
ahead.
Went first.
Sure.
Well, so after making that home base at CEPOD, our first day we went out into the community on Sunday and shared church with our partners, and then we came back to CEPOD on Monday and got an orientation to the history and the economics of Nicaragua. And then we went out into community again on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And some of the things that we did were to conduct a couple of half-day Bible schools with children in the community. And that was really an exciting time. I know that the people that traveled with our group, I think, would universally say that being able to get up close with the children and lead them in Bible study, and then we also had, it was exciting to have a genuine artist with us, Charlene Potter, who taught the children how to do watercolor painting, which is super exciting for them because they have so few opportunities to participate in arts. There just isn't money for that. Sure. So seeing them do watercolor painting, and as an, we had studied the verse or a story that included the loaves and the fishes story. So on the first day, the children painted fish, and that was a beautiful thing to see. So we did those Bible schools, and I also there want to give a shout-out to the Thrivent Foundation, which provided us a $250 action team grant to purchase the art supplies and the Bible story books for those Bible study sessions.
Thank you.
So the other activities we did were to go into the sewing community that we have helped establish over the years and visit with the women and see the products that they've been doing lately. And we had sent money down previously so that we could help them buy fabric to create products that we would then be able to bring home with us. So we were able to see the work of the Sewing Collective and meet the ladies in person, and that was really gratifying.
Indeed.
I guess
indeed.
A little aside about that Sewing Collective is that since the partnership has been active over these 17 years, the first few years were really kind of a get-acquainted period, and we have always emphasized our relationships. We like to actually say that we don't build buildings, we build relationships, because we stay in people's homes and experience their lives, and we walk in solidarity with them. As a matter of fact, it was brought to my attention that Mother Teresa had a beautiful quote that there is more hunger in the world for love and appreciation than for bread. And I've thought that many times, that when we stay in the homes of people and are willing to experience their living conditions and eat the way they do and sleep in the conditions that they experience, they are so appreciative and almost in awe that Americans would, as they put it, come and live for a short time in their humble homes. It's a joy and a pleasure for us, but they seem to be really touched that we're willing to be with them side by side. So, mm-hmm. as I mentioned, then the first 5 years of the partnership, and I was not heavily involved at that time, but the MRV Presbytery helped the partners at their request buy a plot of land so that the partners could have a place to centralize and base their partnership, their pastoral council on their end. Yes. And then they requested help to begin a sewing school to train yes. some women how to sew. And over the next 5 years, they graduated 122 women from sewing school.
That is
but
excellent.
At the end of that period then, they said that none of the women were able to afford their own sewing machines.
Okay.
And so in spite of that training, they still could not find work.
They still wouldn't be able to find work.
Mm-hmm. The other alternative was getting on a bus for 45 minutes and going into Managua and literally working in a sweatshop, the kind of six-day-a-week operation where you get practically no bathroom breaks and long days and just not an attractive opportunity, especially for single mothers in our partners' community who just couldn't be away from home for that much time. So then in about April of 2008, they had made the proposal for this sewing collective, and they wanted to build a building which was proposed to be about 20 by 40 feet, not a huge facility, put in 5 industrial sewing machines, and our presbytery then provided a whopping $18,000, which was able to do all of those things. The pastors had one of the pastors who was a master builder, and he led a team down there that did all the construction, so they provided the labor. And all the pastors there are pretty much what we would call tent makers. They all have day jobs, and they are pastors as they are able to support themselves. So they did the construction of the sewing collective, and it's now been in operation for about 7 years. And there have been some ups and downs. It kind of started off gangbusters, and we thought we were going to be able to set them up that way with the facility and say, okay, you go. But what we quickly learned was they could make products, but there were not really people in Nicaragua who had the disposable income to buy those products and include a fair and just wage for the women who would produce them.
So what did we
it's
do?
Been a long path.
Okay.
Well,
what did we do
for a
in
while,
that case?
Mm-hmm, for a while, basically, we struggled. We tried to give them ideas for products that we thought would sell up here, but the materials they were able to get a hold of were just not the kind of fabrics, nor were they really making the types of products that were terribly attractive to the American consumer.
Sure.
And one in our midst had known that Nicaragua had a history and a tradition of weaving. And so we kept asking, do you have some traditional Nicaraguan fabric? And finally, our partners were able to find that. And Carmen, who is the leader of the sewing collective now, sought out that fabric. And it's a beautiful, colorful, woven fabric that they're now making purses, bags, Bible covers, book covers, and beautiful pastor stoles. And
Indeed. We've
now gotten probably 5 or 6 shipments of that up here. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the beauty of the fabric sells the products themselves. So it was a long period of research and thinking and trying to come up with creative ideas. And I think we finally hit on sort of a winning combination.
Good.
So
well,
we've brought products
continue.
Up with us this time,
sure.
And we'll look forward to the opportunity to market those.
To market them. And certainly some of those events will be Presbytery gatherings and other events, mm-hmm. and just the communication so that around the area people know that we have those things for sale and that the proceeds directly benefit those who have made them. I'd like to talk just a bit about what mission really is and what its intent really should be. I know that many of you who are our listeners, and by the way, we need to let our listeners know that if you wish, you may call in. The number is 909-362-8206. And talk with Joyce, ask some questions. There were those in our group last evening who threatened to call in, so they might they still yet might do that. 909-362-8206. We will welcome hearing from those who wish to call. Joyce, what really is mission, and what should it really be focused upon? We know that there is a good intent in many cases for groups that are engaged in mission and ministry. The intent is to uplift and to work with partners and to help them and to be that catalyst for empowerment and for development. Many times denominations fall short in that area, and it ends up being more one-sided than the other in terms of leadership. But I'd like to ask, what really is mission and what should it be and what is the heart of it?
Well, first I would say that, of course, there are many, many ways to do mission, and I don't want to imply that another denomination's way of doing mission is in any way inappropriate. But having said that, Presbyterians have a phrase, we do mission in partnership. And it's our belief that we can make mission be a two-way street where we teach each other and empower each other. There's, as we've touched on earlier, so many ways that our Nicaraguan brothers and sisters can teach us about faith. And honestly, they are embarking on a project of outreach to the young people in their community. They want to build a coffee shop right on the street next, and a cyber cafe right on the street where hundreds of high school students walk by Monday through Friday. So they know how to do mission in their community, and we could do well to learn much from them. But to answer your question, I actually found a quote from a Methodist website, which I just thought was so perfect. It says, in doing mission work, we must let love guide everything we do. It is important to do work, to build houses for people, to serve food, to labor physically. But it is just as important, maybe more important, to build relationships, to be in community and solidarity with those who we serve. I wish I could attribute the specific person, and I don't have that, but I think that says really beautifully how I'm going to say the Presbyterian Party line on how we like to do mission is to really emphasize those relationships and to be led by the ideas of our partners. And they have capabilities, they have organizational skills and creativity, and we just try to be led by what they do. And there's a story that the Reverend Lyle Franzen here in Omaha had told me about, maybe a hypothetical story, but I think it was real, about a mission organization that put a tractor in a community that had very primitive farming techniques. And it was a wonderful tractor, and they did great things with it. But when they came back on the next mission trip, they saw the tractor sitting at the side all rusty and doing nothing. And, of course, it was the idea of the Americans to provide that tractor. They didn't really ask the local people whether that was the best idea. And it turned out that there was no way to get parts. There was no one who knew how to do maintenance. And so once the tractor ran into some initial problems, it really had a very short life. There hadn't been enough paying attention and being led by the direction of the local people who really knew best what could be done there.
You know, I'm so pleased that you shared that story. I think it is extremely important for anyone in any group, any church, any community organization who is engaged in ministry and mission to understand that the best people, the best groups to determine what is needed in a particular community is the people who live there. They are there, as my pastor from childhood used to say, when you are winter and summer with someone, you know exactly what is needed. They are people who are winter and summer in their homelands, and they know exactly what's needed. So if their techniques and strategies in farming are very different, then it would stand to reason that perhaps a huge tractor, it may work if they train the people how to drive it, if they had replacement tools if something broke, if they were able to spend the kind of time to let to show how it should be used. But to buy whatever it is, a tractor, any other piece of equipment, and not really understand that the people don't use it, then it's counterproductive to what the the intent was. And that's similar to a story that similar in meaning and heart to what a dear friend of mine from the continent of Africa shared once, that they talk about providing important equipment and things in places to help people with farming, to help them with the agricultural needs of the area. But if there is no follow-through, then that's wasted time and money. And it's important that we learn that the heart of mission really is love. And I think the statement you read by the Methodist pastor is so profound, because it really tells that the heart of real ministry is loving people enough to share who we are, but to really take the time to learn who they are. And that's really what Jesus did when he was here on earth. He took time to know people, to understand them, to care for them. He spent time in the homes of his friends. Of some of them were tax collectors. Some of them were just wonderful people who loved them, Lazarus and his sisters. He spent a lot of time with them. And they knew him well, and he knew them well. And that's a lot of what goes into being engaged. If you don't really know the people, you don't really know what they need. And for our listening audience, Joyce and I talked about this quite a bit on the last leg of our journey back here to Omaha. We talked about that on the plane, empowerment, true partnership, what that involves, what it engages, and I think it is essential for us to keep that in mind as we work with communities and with people, because the more we learn, the more we learn from them, the more we are able to share and to have some feeling, so that when a question comes up and we are able to ask informed questions, is this something that would be helpful to your ministry? They can give us an answer that will also be equally as informative. Joyce, I'd like to ask, what is your vision? What is your dream? What would you like to see take place, say, over the next 3 to 5 years with this partnership in Nicaragua?
Well, I guess my primary dream or goal would be to see even broader participation by more people from a variety of congregations or groups in Omaha to go back and forth with our partners. We'll most likely be having some of our partners come visit us in 2017, and we will be looking for homes for them to stay in while they are here, and that's a wonderful opportunity for people to experience another culture up close and personal without having to get on an airplane and experience some potentially challenging living conditions.
Certainly.
So I'd really love to see, again, just a broader representation of people from more of the Presbyterian churches in our area, and also any other faith traditions of people who would be interested in traveling with us, because we just see more and more how, as you said earlier, that quote about in diversity there's unity,
yes.
That diversity gives us so many different ways of looking at things and different strengths, and it just adds a flavor and a texture to the weaving, the tapestry of our partnership that
yes.
is just, it's an added feature. So we do want to work on more projects as we go through the years. We want to strengthen the sewing collective and be able to employ more women. But there's also other programs that the pastors in Nicaragua have developed that we'd like to additionally support. One of those would be that many children are born within the home in Nicaragua, not in hospitals. And
yes.
when that happens, the children are typically undocumented in their own country.
Yes.
And as a result, it then makes things challenging for government services and even to go to school.
Yes.
So Pastor Abraham, who's a part of our partnership down there and who is also a lawyer, was working on a program of going into homes and helping families file to establish that paperwork. But we asked him about it. He said he hasn't been doing it lately because there is not the money to pay for the necessary governmental paperwork because it's
certainly
expensive.
Certainly.
So that's a program. We also have a program where each year we solicit donations from people here in the eastern Nebraska and western Iowa area to, in the coming school year, their school year runs from February to November, I believe. So we'll be working on this later this year and starting now to raise $60 per student to provide school uniforms for and backpacks filled with school supplies for poor children in the La Concepcion community. And as a part of that, we pay the women of our sewing collective a just wage to sew those school uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a two-for-one mission project.
Yes.
And in past years, we've provided those packages for about 100 students, and we'd really like to increase that to about 200 students because
certainly.
they feel that's the level of the need.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about that program is one might say, well, school uniforms, why is that a big deal?
Mm-hmm.
Well, historically in Nicaragua, school uniforms were required, and although they're not required by law anymore, most children wear them, and as a result, a poor family that doesn't have the money to pay for a school uniform or shoes to send their second or their third or even their first child to school, that child just won't go when they look different from every other student
from
at school.
Else. Certainly.
And so the result is that $60, such a small amount of money, is literally the difference between a child going to school for a year and not going at all. And education, as many of us would agree, is such an incredible part of economic self-empowerment. And so the fact that we can literally send a child to school for a year, because the education is free, but all
yes.
they need are the kind of the wherewithal to get them out the door and have the supplies to go there. Now, this only
mm-hmm.
provides one school uniform, and we asked.
Mm-hmm.
The mother
mm-hmm.
said, yes, we wash that uniform every day if that's what it takes, because
certainly.
They only get one. And we
certainly.
Asked the pastors, well, should we change the program to provide them two uniforms? And they said,
mm-hmm.
well, we'd rather have it only be one uniform and be able to do it for more children. So
I didn't mean to cut you off. What a loving statement that
mm-hmm.
if there is one uniform, then they can provide an
mm-hmm.
education and an opportunity for that many more students.
Okay.
And certainly it does take a little extra
mm-hmm.
for washing one piece out every night, but
mm-hmm.
certainly with the family with which I stayed, Joyce, the 13-year-old boy would get up in the morning, and if his 16-year-old cousin wasn't there that morning because she's very responsible, helps take care of him and his little sister and all. He got up and ironed his own shirt to go to school.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the same shirt he'd been wearing. His grandmother washed it out. They hung it up. And the next morning it was ready. The first morning after our first night there, that morning, his cousin was there helping with the children, helping get ready, and then she was going to go on to school herself. But she ironed his shirt for him. And the next morning, he ironed his own shirt. And I was very impressed that he set everything together, plugged in the iron, and he knew exactly how hot the iron should be so he wouldn't burn up his shirt. Some of my colleagues talk about their children trying to iron clothes and setting the iron too hot and burning something up. This young man knew exactly what to do. And when he was finished, he asked me in Spanish, but I could understand, is my shirt okay? Is it wrinkled? He wanted to look his best when he went to school. I was most impressed by that. And Joyce, if there are listeners here, either in the Omaha area or around the nation, if there is someone who wishes to speak more with you about this, has an interest in helping with providing uniforms, is there an email address where you can be reached?
Yes. My email address may give you a little chuckle, but it is in honor of my dear departed cat, and so my email address would be blackcat100@cox.net.
You heard that, our listeners, blackcat100@cox.net. And if there are those who are interested in learning more about this partnership and learning more about mission work and the intent that we have in it, and I will say that the Presbyterian Church USA is engaged in mission all around the world, from the South Pacific to Africa to the Near East to Europe. We have projects in so many places around the world, including Korea, Japan, many places where people who are engaged in the work of evangelism, empowerment, education, and love travel and live in these places, live with the people whom they serve, and take the time to learn about other people, other cultures, their history, and learn how we can be a complement to each other. The heart of mission is always Jesus Christ and to share the Word of God with others. And in doing so, we listen to their stories, they listen to ours, and we continue engaging in a mission that will uplift and will provide all that we pray and discern that God wishes for this world. If there are those who wish to call in, again, I'll share the number, and we only have a few more minutes. It is 909-362-8206, and we are just so grateful that you chose to spend some time today with us, Joyce, because we are involved in work that is extremely important, extremely urgent, and really has quite a lasting effect on those to whom it is shared. Do you have some parting thoughts, anything that we did not cover that you would like to cover, anything that I didn't ask that you would like to address?
Well, I don't really have too much to say, but, you know, actually I would like to finish with one more quote from our friends and brothers and sisters in the Methodist Church, and that is that in mission trips we often feel we are sent to work. We are there to feed people or to build houses or to work in a field. Many times it is easy to let the work blind us to what God really cares about. and that's people.
Yes.
And people and that love that we share in Jesus Christ is, and the relationships we form and walking side by side with each other, we really uphold those relationships as a model of how God wants to be in relationship with us. And that's the beauty of it all.
Indeed, it certainly is. It certainly, certainly is. My friends, we have been engaged in quite a discussion today, one that is enriching, exciting, uplifting, and really chooses to show us where it is God may be calling us. Several years ago on my very, actually my second mission trip to the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the missionary who was with us at that time and helping to take our group around, there were people from all over the nation, Presbyterian people from, at that time I was in Alabama, two of us went from Alabama to the Congo, Phil Collins, who was the chair of the mission team, and I traveled to do a little research, a little scouting to see how we might engage in a partnership with the particular presbytery where I was, because its history with the Democratic Republic of the Congo was very strong, very solid, and all that was needed was to make it official. So guess who came up with this bright idea that let's make this an official partnership? And one of the first things that happened in talking with our national person who was in charge was, well, you need to come over with a delegation that's going from the United States. We're going to the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And my mouth flew open, and never in a million years did I guess that that is what would be taking place. Well, it did. And one of the things we learned was that the beauty of being with people, knowing who they are, knowing the history, knowing the relationship, helps to build lasting, wonderful, strong, and ongoing partnerships for eternity. And I'm still in touch with some of those people by email mostly, but some of them come to the United States, and we at least have an opportunity to speak with each other by telephone if they're not in this immediate area. So we are engaged as a denomination all around the world, and we'll continue to do that. The Presbytery of Missouri River Valley is engaged in mission with the Nicaraguan partners and people of various denominations, and we consider this a very strong, a very solid, a very lasting relationship with them. And Joyce, I thank you so much for being with us today. We've got about 3 minutes before it is time to call this hour to a close. Please know that on behalf of CaregiverStory.com, our producer, Carolyn A. Brent, who has been listening. And Carolyn, if you have any parting comments, we wish to hear them, please, from you in the last couple of minutes. We wish each and every one who has listened today, we pray that something has been said that will touch your heart, will have you to be more interested in ministry, and to email blackcat100@cox.net. God bless you. God keep you. We look forward to being with you again on the first Sunday in August. We will be live with Dr. David Sawyer, and we look forward to hearing from you, to being with you, and to continuing to engage in ministry. Thank you, Joyce. God bless you, Carolyn. Goodbye, everyone. We will see you again. We will talk with you again. God's peace to you in every way. Goodbye.